EAB Digital Radio, it's time for the Daily Service, led by the Reverend Dr. Kirsty Thorpe. Here on FM, it's our Book of the Week. The acclaimed actor Alan Cumming reads from his powerful new memoir, Not My Father's Son. While filming the TV series Who Do You Think You Are, Alan has learned that his grandfather, who died in a suspicious shooting accident in Malaysia, spent time in a psychiatric hospital after the war. The revelations prompted recollections of his own nervous breakdown at the age of 28 and memories of his treatment at the hands of his violent father. Now he's waiting for the results of a DNA test to find out whether he is in fact his own father's son.
Monday the 31st of May, 2010. I landed in Cape Town early after flying through the night from London. I was returning to South Africa because I was in the middle of shooting a television miniseries called The Runaway, based on the novel by Martina Cole. It was set in London's seedy Soho streets in the 60s and 70s, and I played Desiree, a transvestite who runs the Peppermint nightclub. In sharp contrast to the way most trans people are depicted on screen, Desiree was a very positive role model. That was what made me want to do the series, as well as the fact that I had just joined the cast of The Good Wife and had spent the previous few months in a suit playing an uptight politico named Eli Gold. I traded the suit for stilettos, happily. As soon as I landed, I was plunged back into my life in Cape Town. I was picked up at the airport by my driver, Hodges, a huge African man whose laugh was so bassy and reverberating that the entire car shook when I said something that set him off. I went straight to the set for a makeup test, then a wardrobe fitting, then back home to the downtown apartment building where most of the cast were barracked, with a lovely manicurist, or nail technician, as she preferred to be called, was waiting to reattach the acrylic nails that Desiree sported. Tomorrow, I would be up at the crack of dawn and back to work. Tommy Darling's odyssey to Malaysia and the mystery of the final months of his life would remain a mystery for the next month, and the question of whether or not Alec Cumming was my birth father would not be answered for a few days either. I carefully pulled up the blankets with my reattached talons and fell into a deep and grateful sleep. Friday, the 4th of June. My hand was trembling as I clicked open the email with the medical report. For a few moments, I couldn't see anything but a blur of letters and numbers. Eventually, I saw that on the left, there was a list of the various components of the test, and then two columns on the right that showed my results and Tom's. At the end of every single line, the numbers were the same. I kept staring at the lists and columns in front of me, and eventually they began to vibrate and go out of focus. I emailed my assistant. "Brian, I'm in a state. I want to be really sure. Just confirm to me that this means Tom and I have the same father. Thanks. Alan." I got up and began changing out of Desiree's costume. There was a knock on the door and a wardrobe assistant came in to collect my clothes. I handed them to her in a daze and wished her a good night. Then I heard the familiar ping of an incoming email on my computer. "Yes, your DNA and Tom's DNA absolutely match. He is your father. I'm so sorry." Immediately, rage overwhelmed me. I opened my mouth and let out a roar so deep and primal and furious that I scared myself. My knees buckled and I flopped down into the chair again. Tom was copied in on the email too, and I picked up my phone to call him. But I knew that I couldn't have that conversation here. I needed to be alone and at home. So I tried to calm myself down enough to be able to walk to Hodges' car and get back to my apartment. You know how sometimes you don't intend to do something, and then you do, and it turns out to be the best thing you ever could have done? I told Hodges. "I have to phone my father tonight. and tell him that I am actually his son? The old man's eyes widened, but he kept his eyes on the road. I think you need to start at the beginning, Alan, he said calmly. I told him everything. He already knew about Who Do You Think You Are and Tommy Darling, as he had shared my excitement in the lead-up to the filming and was anxious to hear the revelations on my return. But I hadn't told him about my father. He listened in silence as I unravelled before him. It seemed even more surreal and ridiculous when I heard it spoken out loud. We'd arrived at the apartment building and I was still going, so Hodges turned off the ignition and waited patiently for me to finish. So now I'm going upstairs and I'm going to speak to my brother and then I'm going to call my father and tell him, I said finally. You must not do that, Alan, he said quietly but firmly. He was sad for me, but he looked serious too. You are angry. You have a right to be angry, and you should be angry, but you must not call your father in anger. Speak to your brother. Get it out of your system with him, and then sleep. Call your father tomorrow, when anger will not cloud what you need to say to him. I opened my mouth to speak, but nothing came out. He was right, of course. Thank you, Hodges, I managed eventually. Tom had the same reaction as me. Rage. We spoke for a long time, going round and round in circles, trying to make sense of it all. Was it the last hurrah of a heartless dying man? Did he really set out to confuse and upset us one last time? Surely not even he was capable of such cruelty. I had always thought my father was an angry, violent man, lashing out at those weaker than himself to blame them for and validate his situation. But now, I was beginning to think there might be more to it than mere venom. I started to consider the possibility that my father was simply mentally ill. But I realised I couldn't go down that particular rabbit hole right now. There was something more pressing and more important to think about. Mum. We would have to tell her this story, and I knew it would devastate her. I said goodnight to Tom. It was exactly 2 weeks since that night in London when he had come round and we had gone onto the roof deck. 2 weeks in which I had clung eagerly to the belief that I was not my father's son. Now all that was dashed. Now I had to readjust to the fact, the absolute medical fact, that I was. Of course, it was good to know the truth, but it was hard to let go of the fantasy I had carried and nurtured for the past 14 days. You know, I was so happy not to be his son, I said, as Tom and I were hanging up. But at least now I know I'm your full brother. Saturday the 5th of June. As soon as the first assistant director called lunch, my stomach clenched. I went back to my trailer and ate the food that was waiting for me. I'd never chewed my food so well. I reached for my phone and dialed his number. Hello? He said. The signal was scratchy and weak. It's Alan, I began. Oh, yes. I'm calling to tell you I got the results of the DNA test and I want you to know that I am your son. There was silence at the other end of the line. Well, I'm very surprised to hear that, he said, sounding genuinely shocked. I bet you are, I replied. I waited for him to make the next move. Are you absolutely sure? He asked. Totally. I can send you a copy of the results if you like. Believe me, if I wasn't your son, I would not lie to you about it. I checked myself. This was my last ever chance to try and understand him and why he had done this, and I mustn't blow it. It never happened, Dad. You imagined it all. Mum never had an affair. None of it ever happened. but I had to believe it, Alan. I saw them coming out of the room.
Whatever you saw was innocent. You made it all up.
I saw what I saw, he said.
No, I countered. You saw what you wanted to see, or what you decided you'd seen.
There was silence. You imagined it. It was a figment of your imagination. I am your son.
I wondered if I should just hang up.
I didn't do this to hurt you, Alan.
It felt like an apology, although technically it wasn't. But it was enough to stop me in my tracks, to marvel at how it felt to hear my father show some feeling, some tenderness. But was that truly what he was doing? His first line of defence had failed. Perhaps now he was trying to emotionally manipulate me. I realised how tired I was of trying to second-guess him. I'd been doing it for over 40 years.
Look, I believe that you believed this. I don't think you just made it up. But you have hurt me. You have hurt me all my life. And you've hurt Tom and you've hurt Mum, I said calmly.
But you know we never bonded, was my father's response.
Maybe we never bonded because you were treating me like shit because you thought I was another man's child, I said.
I could feel him reel.
There's no need for that, he said, anger in his voice.
I almost felt sorry for him, but I wanted to say one last thing. One thing that needed to be said. One thing I never thought I'd have the strength to say.
It never happened. And I can't believe you never talked to Mum about it, and you had to wait for me.
My voice squeaked a little. I was starting to lose it, but I knew this was nearly over, and I had to get it out.
I had to be the one to tell you the truth. For 45 years, you never had the balls to find out the truth for yourself. You based your entire life upon a false assumption, and you made all our lives hell.
I waited for a response.
Surely, surely he could give me something. Just some acknowledgement that he understood the enormity of the pain he had caused, at least in the last 2 weeks, if not for a lifetime.
I should have known better. Silence.
Okay, take care. I'll talk to you soon.
I stopped. What was I saying? If ever there was a time for the truth, it was now.
Actually, I won't be speaking to you again. But take care.
Aye, was the last thing my father ever said to me.
Bye,
I said, and hung up.
I looked up at myself in the mirror of my trailer. I had just had the most horrible conversation of my life, and the very last conversation I would ever have with my tormentor. I was free of him at last. I wondered what he would have done had he known that during that conversation, I was wearing high heels, a bra and panties, and a full face of makeup.
Alan Cumming continues to read from Not My Father's Son at the same time tomorrow. The abridger was Sarah Davis and the producer was Elizabeth Allard. After the news, Jenny talks to the legendary violinist Kyung Hwa Chung.
What does it mean to be free? Why are things beautiful? How can I tell right from wrong?
These questions don't have one answer, they have many answers. I'm joined by the philosopher Angie Hobbs, the theologian Giles Fraser, the neuropsychologist Paul Brooks, and the lawyer Harry Potter.
In A History of Ideas, Melvin Bragg chairs a discussion, then each guest explores their ideas further in their own programme.
In order to let everyone live in paradise, kill one child? Bentham's answer would be yes.
On BBC Radio 4, A History of Ideas continues each weekday at midday. You can listen to the series so far and watch special animations on the Radio 4 website.